Okay, so we have a load of standalone computers lying around in a business. Let's go back in time, about 20 years. And we want a network. Why? What benefit do we gain from having these computers talk to each other? Well, it's all about sharing. 30 standalone computers in an IT suite would mean 30 printers, and that's not very manageable. So by creating a network where all the computers can communicate, we could actually use one printer and share it amongst the 30 workstations. Now these days we just expect a computer on a LAN would have internet access. But if we go back to a time before broadband, where computers had to use the telephone line to communicate, dial-up internet access that was known as, so a device called a modem would sit between the computer and the telephone line and would convert data signals from the computer into screeches that could be played down the telephone as a voice call. Exactly the same noises that are associated with fax machines. How tedious it would have to be to unplug the modem from one computer and plug it into another in order for that machine to also have internet access. But that's what people had to do. In fact, that's the only way of getting a standalone computer online, to plug it into a telephone line using a modem. Now, if we were to network two computers together, it would be possible using the network for two computers to share the internet connection provided by just one modem and one telephone line. So we can share a printer and we can share an internet connection. Why else might we want to connect computers together? Well, with standalone machines, the only way to get a file off one computer onto another is to put it onto a disk, carry it across the room, and insert the disk into the second machine. How very mid-1990s. If we ignore for a moment the use of the internet and email and file attachments via that mechanism, networking computers together allows us to share data. In other words, files from the hard drive of one machine can be accessed from another. So sharing data, printers, and an internet connection is the justification for building a computer network in a business. And that sort of network would be known as a peer-to-peer network, meaning all the computers are connected together and files from one machine can be accessed from any of the others. Great for a very small number of computers, absolute nightmare for a large number. And the magic number is 10. Indeed, using Microsoft operating systems, it's not possible to have more than 10 machines on a workgroup, which is a Microsoft term for a peer-to-peer network. In reality, though, trying to manage a peer-to-peer network is an absolute nightmare for anything more than just a few computers. So what do we mean by manage a network? Surely once a network's set up, that's it. Network maintenance really falls down to two main operations, and that is security and backup of data. Users do silly things. They change their password and then forget what it is. People leave, new people start, so user accounts need to be disabled and new user accounts created. Users can't be trusted to back up their own data. So imagine a scenario with just three computers on a peer-to-peer network. Each person in the business may use their own computer, so that's three user accounts, right? Wrong. 9 user accounts, because each user needs to have credentials on each computer in order to share files. So a peer-to-peer network between Rod, Jane and Freddy is fine and dandy after it's been set up, but as soon as Rod decides to change his password, either because he's fickle or because perhaps the system says, hey, your password's 30 days old, time for a new one. Rod changes his password on his machine, and now his credentials no longer have currency on Jane or Freddy's computer. So the hassle of managing security on a peer-to-peer network is a very good reason for setting up a client-server network. And what this means is that the server would centralize security. In other words, no user account would exist on the individual computers, which we'll now call clients. Instead, the three user accounts for Rod, Jane and Freddy would be set up and managed on the server, allowing any of the three users to log on to and access the data from any of the three workstations. Now imagine backing up the data, spread across three different workstations, or indeed up to 10 workstations on a peer-to-peer network. Wouldn't it be easier if instead of saving files on the hard drive of their computer, if all users saved files in one central location, i.e. on the server? So whereas any network allows the sharing of data between computers, only a client-server network centralizes the storage of data. And the centralized storage of data makes for easier backup, because only the file server needs to be backed up. So if servers are so great, why do we have peer-to-peer networks at all? Well, we tend to have them in very small environments where the cost of a server is just not feasible. Also, of course, the server operating system is a lot more complex than a client operating system and requires greater expertise to set up and manage. Peer-to-peer networks can almost set themselves up just running through various wizards. But will they be set up to the right level of security to safeguard business data? Probably not. Which means peer-to-peer networks are great for in the home, for the convenience of sharing files between computers, not so good for businesses, where the centralized security and the centralized storage of data, meaning easy backup, are the main reasons why a client-server network would be used. So a server is said to be hierarchical. It controls the client computers, in that it controls their security. Who can log on, what can they access, and indeed when they can log on. Servers are also very good at helping a network manager look after all of the computers on the network. You imagine a situation with hundreds of client workstations and one network manager in the business. Is it feasible for that person to physically get around all of the computers just to, for example, perform a virus scan or a Windows update? And by Windows update, I mean, of course, an operating system update, because you shouldn't be using brand names within the exam. So looking after the client workstations on a network without a person physically logging in to those workstations is known as remote management. And whilst not strictly associated with client-server networks, the assumption is that a client-server network would have a network manager, and the network manager would look after all of the computers on the network, and the only way to do that sensibly is to use remote management software. So imagine this scenario. Rod goes to see the network manager and says, "I'm dreadfully sorry, but I'm an idiot, and I've changed my password and forgotten what it is. Could you kindly set it back for me, please?" And the network manager says, "Sure, Rod, I'll set your password to idiot so you remember it." Is this an example of remote management? No, it isn't, because the network manager is simply using the server to set up some security, and that's what the server does. Remote management relates to doing something on an individual computer on the network without logging into it interactively, meaning sat in front of it. Instead, a network manager can log in remotely to perform certain routine tasks. So installing software onto a computer remotely would be an example of remote management, but backing up data on the file server has got nothing to do with remote management. That's just the network manager looking after the server and managing the network. And the final aspect of remote management is the ability for a network manager to spy on what people are using the workstations for. In other words, to see what websites users might be accessing, to see what programs they might be using. And in a particularly harsh business environment, it may well be that employees are disciplined if they're not actually working, and the network manager routinely spies on them in order to make sure they are working.